And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode number 193, and as always, we're coming at you from beautiful Chicago, Illinois. My name is Tom Harris, and I'm your host for this, and just a good, well, warm welcome along to you all. Yeah, I had a week off last week, personal reasons. Sorry about that. It does happen sometimes, and we do have some vacation coming up here in July. We'll be talking about that in just a second. So just wanted to shout out to Manuel Carmona, who asked us if we were going to be doing Ragnarok, the new Walt Simonson series from IDW. Yes, we are going to be covering that. I'm waiting for it to come out in trade. Yeah, because I'm cheap like that. But yeah, we're definitely going to be covering that. That's something that's very, very high on my list of things that I want to cover. Anyway, so yeah, I have a couple things to announce here. First of all, yeah, I know I've been hinting around lately that I'm going to be going to Iceland this year, and that is now set in stone. I'm definitely going to Iceland this year. In fact, I'm going to be there the last 2 weeks of July. So those 2 weeks will probably not have a show. If I do have a show, it's going to be vacation content, kind of like what I did last year. Probably one of the weeks won't have anything, and the other week will have something that's pre-recorded. But we'll see. We'll see how the schedule breaks down as I kind of get towards those plans. I'm planning on spending a day or two with Robert Pels, who's one of our listeners in Akureyri. I don't know how to pronounce that. I'm probably really botching it. And yeah, so yeah, this will be the second trip in a row where I've actually met up with a listener. So that'll be cool. The first, of course, being Chris Bendorf, who I actually hooked up with when we were in Ireland just for a few hours. But actually, we'll be getting pretty excited about it, actually. Going to be doing a self-drive trip kind of around the edges of Iceland. So it's going to be a big circle around all of Iceland. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've been working pretty heavily on that for the last couple of weeks and talking with travel agents and so forth at god-awful hours in the morning because they're 5 hours ahead of us. So yeah, I get up in the morning and at 5:30 and talk with the travel agent over the internet, trying to determine where I'm going to be going, etc. So it looks to be shaping up to be pretty cool. Really can't afford the trip, but you know what? It's a once in a lifetime kind of thing. So at this point, I'm just deciding what the fuck, you know, gonna handle it. All right. So I think I mentioned last week that I am going to tell you kind of my basic thoughts about The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which I finally saw a couple of weeks ago. Now, Pete and I also saw Avengers 2 this past week, but as I posted on the Facebook group, hey, we have a Facebook group. As I posted on the Facebook group, we're not going to talk about that for a couple of weeks because I want people to have a chance to everybody to see it first. So probably 2 weeks from now, we'll be talking about The Avengers 2. I will give you a kind of a capsulated version of it. I thought it was a good movie. So anyway, so Amazing Spider-Man 2, going to talk about that. As you know, I'm usually the last one to see anything. And so that one's kind of been simmering for a while. I didn't get excited about it when it came out in the theater. And that's one of the reasons why it took me so long to see it. And it's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. I think it deserves some of the bad rep that it gets. But for what it is, it's not that bad. You know, I don't think it's as bad as some people have kind of put it across. There were a number of things about the movie that I liked about it. First of all, I liked the portrayal of Peter Parker. I think that it's far and above better than the portrayal of Peter Parker when Tobey Maguire was playing it. I like Andrew Garfield as the character. They give him a modern sensibility as opposed to a 60s sensibility. And I think that works for the character. I mean, I think that works as far as a movie character. I don't know if it would work in the comics as well, because the comics version of Peter Parker, I think, has a very specific personality in a way that the cinematic Peter Parker doesn't. So I think that it works pretty well for the cinematic universe and not as well as it would in the comics. But one of the things that I actually kind of dug about the character, and it's a subtle thing, but it's something I noticed as an actor, and that is that Peter Parker has a very slight New York accent. I love that. It gives it a level of veritas, you know, that you actually can buy. Okay, this guy grew up in Queens. He's got a New York accent, you know, and it's not as obvious when he's Spider-Man. But it was definitely something that was there. And when you consider Andrew Garfield is not an American actor, I believe he's Irish or English, you know, he does a really good, just a slight New York accent. I thought that was one of those touches that kind of made the character for me. Now, as far as the plot of the movie itself, you have this whole thing where you have Harry Osborn coming back, and you know they're trying to revive the friendship between Peter and Harry, who apparently were friends years ago. And that is kind of weird. It's kind of a weird subplot. And of course, Harry becomes the Green Goblin again, and you know, because he's got this disease that he's dying of, you know, the goblin disease that his, I guess his father gave it to him. I'm not really sure about that. One of the things that surprised me is that the guy who played Harry, who's Dane DeHaan, was actually the guy from the Metallica movie, which I thought he was really good in. And I, as a character actor, I don't know that he's that great. I mean, he looks good, but he reminded me a little bit of the guy who played in Beowulf, Crispin Glover. That's who he kind of reminded me of, as Harry Osborn. It's kind of like he was trying to channel Crispin Glover for that role, which doesn't really work to me unless you're Crispin Glover. So anyway, so there was that, and there was a big deal made about, you know, him fighting Electro and the Rhino. Now, first of all, I think Electro in the movie, I like the idea more than I liked the execution. I think that Electro is a difficult villain to do just because the original villain is just so stupid. I think that, you know, he's a guy, he shoots lightning, but, you know, and that's pretty much what he is in the comics. In the movie, they tried to give him a little bit more motivation. He was kind of a loser, and he was kind of obsessed with Spider-Man, and he gets turned into this glow stick monster thing, which they could have done without. I mean, I understand they were going for a striking visual, and they definitely had that. I mean, the movie had the special effects. It had the visuals. It was a beautiful movie to look at, but there were a lot of things still that didn't work for me plot-wise. There were a lot of, also even special effects-wise, that didn't work, and some weird perspective and some weird visual stuff going on that didn't really work for me. And that, because it's been now a couple of weeks since I've seen the movie, I don't really remember that much about it. It's not a movie that sticks with you. I'll tell you right now, it's not. Really disappointed, I think, in the Rhino, because, you know, you're led to believe, you know, all the preview stuff coming out, that the Rhino was going to be a part of the movie. And really, he isn't. He's there for the last, 5 minutes? And it's really just kind of a capper, kind of teasing what the next movie might be. And of course, we're not going to have another one of these Amazing Spider-Man movies. It's not, at least not in exactly that same form. So, you know, as the swan song for Garfield's character, I mean, I like Andrew Garfield as Peter Parker and as Spider-Man, but a great movie it wasn't. And that seems to be the issue with Spider-Man, is you end up with one really good movie, and then you have the kind of the lackluster sequels to it. And that's what we had here. All right. So I kind of rambled on about the movies a little bit longer than I intended to. So let's go ahead and cover the issue of Thor that we're going to be covering here. Onward to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
Indeed, and this week we are looking at Thor number 16. Cover date is October 1999. Retailed for $1.99. Cover art is by Johnny Romita Jr. and Claus Johnson. Shows Thor facing off against one of the evil enchanters, which one I can't tell because they all kind of look the same to me. Kind of a striking cover here by J.R. Jr. Thor looks like he's wailing Mjolnir into the enchanter, who seems to be deflecting it. We see the living talisman here on the back of the enchanter. I didn't realize they wore the talisman on their back. So maybe I'm wrong about that. Or maybe that's the first time we've actually seen that. I'm not really sure. Striking cover. Opening up to the splash page, of course, we have... It's not really a splash. It's kind of, you know, one of those fake splashes. The real splash is the next page. We have Heimdall, the guardian of the Rainbow Bridge, blowing his Gjallar horn. At least that's what I assume it is, because it doesn't look like a horn, folks. It looks like some sort of weird flag. This is a very one-dimensional picture here. Anyway, you have the sound effect, Barut, and Heimdall shouting, "Let all who dwell within yon golden spires of Asgard respond to the call of ever-vigilant Heimdall. I sense a presence, one that threatens omnipotent Odin and all Asgard as well." And we have Sif and Baldur and some other dude in a hood, and they're rushing up the stairs towards the royal chamber. And Heimdall's like, "To arms, Lady Sif. Should Heimdall sound a warning, none may question its authenticity." "As ever, brave Baldur, any enemy of Odin is an enemy of all Asgard." And they approach the door, which look, it's still closed. "The royal chamber, it appears undisturbed." "Still, we cannot ignore Heimdall's alarm. Pretense and niceties must be cast aside." "For the sake of safety, such must it ever be." Very Stan Lee-ish dialogue here on the first page. And Baldur kicks open Odin's palace door, kind of smashes the door. And what do they find? They find Odin. He's in here. We have a beautiful double page here of Odin. He's standing next to his Odin racing car bed, the sort of the weird Viking ship bed that we've seen him use before, though it doesn't really look the same. And we have the credits. Dan Jurgens was the writer. John Romita Jr. and Claus Johnson are the artists. Gregory Wright was the colorist. R.S. and Comic Crafts, Wes Abbott was the letterer. Tom Brevoort was the editor. And Bob Harris is the editor-in-chief. Odin is dressed in his pajama sort of thing, which looks really heavy, and he's got fur boots with it. So it must be really cold in Odin's palace. And we have, Baldur and Sif and this other person who I can't tell who it is approaching. "We beg thy pardon, sire, but Heimdall sounded the alert. Did his senses ring true? Were they attacked?"
"For the briefest of moments, I did feel the brush of a presence as I slept, as though the breeze itself didst live. Alas, 'twas a fleeting moment, one now gone. Mayhap 'twas but a dream, one so lifelike that it didst alert ever-vigilant Heimdall. After all, 'tis undeniably true that the troubles of my son Thor and his trials on Midgard troubled me greatly."
And we shift back to Earth, where we have Jake Olsen and Jane Foster. You remember, they are on the run. They escaped the hospital so that Jake wouldn't get arrested. And they're running down the street dressed in their... Jake is dressed as a doctor, and Jane is dressed in her normal doctor clothes. And they're going down these alleys.
"I can't believe I'm doing this," says Jane. "Running from the law is not my style."
"You've done more than any friend can expect, Jane," says Jake. "Go back, get yourself out of trouble, and forget about my problems."
"You can't be serious."
"I am. The police think I'm a drug dealer, Jane, and for all I know, they're right. I always assumed this life I inherited was a worthy one, but what if it isn't? What if I'm guilty?"
"Even if Jake Olsen is, you aren't. You're Thor, an Avenger, in line for the throne, and you need a lawyer." "Come on, and no feeling sorry for yourself."
And she grabs his lab coat, shaking him around.
"You're right, as always. What did I ever do without you?"
I used to wonder that myself."
"Get yourself out of trouble, Jane. Me, I have a hammer to find."
And we ship back to the hospital, where we have Officer O'Neill, the detective who's kind of chasing after Jake, and we have Demetrius, who was revealed as a police detective last issue, and of course Hannah, who is Jake Olsen's girlfriend.
Word has it that Doc Foster helped Olsen escape. That true, O'Neill?
I'm not 100% sure it was her, but that's my theory, Demetrius. Never thought she was part of the drug ring.
Oh, you guys know better about both of them.
Wish that was true, Hannah, but we can prove otherwise. We've been watching him a long time, Miss Fairmount. We have evidence against your boyfriend that'll put him away for years.
And a random cop runs up. Detective O'Neill, we got a call that Olsen was spotted downtown.
Get the address and let's move.
And we cut back to Jake, and he's kind of heading towards the hammer, I guess. And he's thinking,
'Twould seem my sense of honor hath not served me well of late. 'Tis obvious that my sense of obligation to Jake Olsen was misguided. If he was truly a criminal, then 'tis unfitting for the Odinson to assume his guise. Though Olsen lost his life saving another during my battle with the Destroyer, I'll not honor his memory by living the life of an evil man. Once Mjolnir is mine again, I shall abandon this shell forever. When last I saw Mjolnir, it lay through yon alley. It Heimdall's eyes!
During this whole time, Jake is climbing over fences, climbing up fire escapes. You know, just the thing that somebody who just had a heart attack would do. And we have a beautiful double-page splash here of the alleyway where Jake left his hammer, and we see the Warriors Three. This is what we left off with last issue. You have Volstagg and Fandral kind of laying on the ground. They're obviously alive, but it's kind of stunned. And Hogun is going up against and racked the Enchanter with his mace.
"More's the pity that thou mayest offer a challenge no stronger than that of a mace, for 'tis a magnificent day for battle, and Enracked doth thirst for combat."
"Thou shalt have that and more, base one. For thy crimes against Thor and Asgard, let mine be the hand that puts an end to thee. Mine, and mine alone."
"Thou art known as Hogun the Grim. 'Twould seem appropriate, then, to give thee cause to be grimmer still."
And Rack shoots this green magic ball blasting at Hogun. And Hogun's like, "Org!" And that we see that there's people hiding in the behind the trash and stuff in the alley. It's like,
"Dude, like the guy in the fuzzy hat is getting fried."
"Oh, man, this fight's way better than what you see on Springer."
And we have Volstagg and Fandral talking on the ground here.
"Odd's blood, Fandral. Didst yon evildoer truly incinerate the mace of Hogun?"
"Aye, that he did, Volstagg. To the attack, then, that we might dispatch this devil evermore to the hell whence he was spawned."
And Enracht hears them because, you know, they're talking out loud right next to him. And he grabs them up in a bunch of green Kirby crackle, and he's trying to get rid of them here.
"Begone! Thou art beneath the concern of Enracht. 'Tis Odin and his meddling son who hath raised the ire of the holders of the living talisman. Since I have not desire to deal with the likes of thee, let mortal men do my bidding."
And he casts his green spell on these people who are watching in the alley, and he's changing them into some kind of weird monster things, and they start to attack the Warriors Three. And we see Jake Olsen, he's kind of hiding behind boxes, or they don't like boxes, they look like blocks of wood, but I think that's just the way J.R. Jr. draws.
"Godling flesh to soothe thy hunger, my demons, dine and dine well." And he throws Volstagg and Fandral at the monsters,
and we see Hogun is laying on the ground.
"All those who dare follow the word of murderous Odin must perish, as shall he by day's end."
And the Warriors Three are fighting against the demons.
"Savages, away with thee," says Fandral. "Check thy wrath, Fandral. Their plight is not their doing," says Hogun.
And Jake is kind of sneaking around behind Enracht, and he grabs the handle of the hammer, and he begins to transform. And there's some dialogue here.
"Mjolnir, for too long hast thou eluded thy master's benevolent grasp. Even more so than ere before, 'tis clear the mortal man must step aside."
"Hey, I sense a presence most familiar."
And Jake grabs the hammer out of the wall, bangs it on the ground.
"That the affairs of gods may last be settled by gods. Heed my command, Mjolnir, that the form of Jake Olsen might give way at last."
"To the awe-inspiring power of the God of Thunder."
And he changes into Thor.
"Stand thee back, Enracht."
And Thor is there in the alleyway, and he's got Mjolnir over his head, and he's about to smack, and racked, it looks like, right in the top of the noggin. And I have to say, his shoulders here are really unrealistically large. It's very, they're like twice the width of the rest of his body.
The Day of Atonement is at hand. So swears the son of Odin. So saith Thor.
And he's going to smack him on the noggin, but Enrakt reaches up and grabs Thor by the neck. And with his other hand, he's pushing back the hammer.
Speakest thou no more, Odin's son, after all these months of toying with thee, of building my strength and power whilst ensconced inside thy Uru mallet. 'Tis now an unbridled pleasure indeed to have the chance to smite thee down.
We see the green fire of Enrakt is kind of burning around them on the floor. And the chunk of land that they're on, the chunk of alleyway that they're on, rises up out of the ground with a crit. And it's rising up out of the ground. And they're kind of tussling hand to hand and not really getting anywhere.
Bah, thou art not known to be a humorist, that thou raisest Mjolnir against me? Dost thou not see the folly of thine actions? Like my brothers, I can control the power of thine Uru mallet. Reverse it, and hurl it back at thee with a fury thou darest not dream of.
And he shoots Thor with his green energy bolt kind of thing, and Thor goes flying back. And we see he's being attacked by this weird energy thing that's kind of crackling around him.
Nay, evil such as yours must never triumph. Yet I am held prisoner, unable to move.
And we see the Warriors Three have kind of wrapped up all these demons, so they're obviously not much of a threat. Volstagg is holding them back, and we have Fandral and Hogan kind of wrapping them up in rope.
I guess it's just really convenient that these boxes that are laying around the alley are full of rope, huh?
None but Thor could vanquish this foe, and for that he must be freed, says Volstagg.
Aid him we shall, once the last of these atrocities are safely bound.
And we have a couple cop cars converging on the alleyway. And I guess they're talking over the radio, because otherwise they're shouting to each other through closed car windows.
This is the place, Detective O'Neill.
Olsen was sighted here.
Looks like World War III over there, says Demetrius. Kind of makes you wonder what his game is, doesn't it, Demetrius?
And they come across this alleyway with the demons kind of smashing through.
Behind me, Hannah. We got us a different game to worry about first.
And the demons are kind of coming towards the humans, but Fandral jumps in the way and is blocking the demons with his sword.
Fear thee not, m'lady. So long as dashing Fandral lives, nary a hair of thy fetching mane shall be harmed.
Oh, says Hannah. And we shift to Thor and Enrakt fighting on this clod of concrete in the sky.
Thou art my prisoner, godling, and soon enow my kill. I say thee nay, Enrakt. So long as I do yet wield Mjolnir, I shall use it to wage war upon the likes of thee. None may stand against a blast of anti-force.
Yeah, anti-force. Yeah, that's something either we've never seen before or haven't seen for a very long time. And Thor is shooting energy out of the hammer with a thoom, and it hits Enrakt with a bract, but it doesn't seem to really affect him at all.
Summon the mightiest of powers, and I'll still not fall to thy hammer, Thor. Thy precious hammer, once my home, is but a toy to me. Knowest ye well that after the death of my brother Forsung, hate for thee and thy father didst consume my soul. I knew my remaining brothers Magnir and Brona were cast by Odin into the lost limbo of infinity unending. 'Tis not an easy realm to find, but after years of searching, find it I did. Unfortunately, 'twas even a more difficult place to escape. But escape I did, by accessing a dimension where many a sorcerer dwell, where one in particular didst unwittingly help deliver us from imprisonment.
And we see, you know, as he's narrating, we see this going on. He's looking this weird negative zone kind of place. And you see Magnir and Brona kind of drifting there, floating around. And Enrakt appears in kind of this weird portal. And there's this weird, glow, orange fire kind of glow.
Aye, 'twas a magical fire pit, one that accessed other dimensions I did stumble upon. Thus was freedom attained. Thus did fate quench our thirst for vengeance. The pit belonged to a sorceress known as Saranda, who by coincidence was host to a most unique visitor. Now, if that sounds familiar, there's a reason for that. Remember Thor Annual in 1999, which we've already covered on the show. Who by coincidence was host to a most unique visitor with a most unique weapon. And we see that Thor and Saranda are laying asleep in her quarters and on separate beds because, you know, you have to be family friendly, I guess. Anyway, fair Saranda, says Thor, that I was the visitor thou speakest of. 'Twas then that ye didst gain access to Mjolnir. Oy, Odin's son, but my years of searching left me weak. Though I didst then inhabit thine hammer, 'twas months before my powers were replenished, and now that I could attack thee. Now victory is near at hand. Thou art as naught but malleable clay to my will, godling, one whose life I might extinguish at any moment. Before thou art vanquished, thou shouldst first give witness to this. And he summons up a voyeuroscope portal or whatever, giant TV screen, and we see the image of the Allfather himself, Odin. He's fighting against Magnir and Brona, kind of taking them on both by himself. And Thor's like, nay, 'tis Father Odin, bravely waging war against thy brothers Magnir and Brona. But the High Lord is still weak from his imprisonment by the Dark Gods. Even he cannot hope to defeat their combined might.
Which is why I journey to them now, Thunder God. 'Tis a death I must witness, aye, even partake in first hand. So be gone, thou shalt taste death's sting soon enow. And he fires a giant green energy bolt, Thor, with a bathoom, and pitches Thor away down the street. And Thor is gone, and we then shift to Asgard. And I guess this is where we see what's going on here. And we see Odin watching on his own cosmic voyeuroscope the battle going on Midgard between the Warriors 3 and the demons.
And it should strike us all about now that that's really confusing, because we just saw Odin doing something else. And there's a reason for that, which we'll find out in a moment.
And he's like, heh, a dire predicament, wouldst thou not sayest, Tarakus?
My liege, wouldst thou have me summon Balder the Brave and Lady Sif to aid thy warriors?
I ask not thine advice, Vizier. Away with thee, and let thy shadow cross my threshold no more this day.
Aye, Majesty, and the Vizier goes away.
And we see the sort of crackling of energy, and Odin says,
cretin, after all this time I did not return to be troubled by the gratuitous prattling of one such as he. Let no one yet suspect the truth. Let no one suspect that 'tis not Odin who doth take the measure of events.
But rather, Loki the trickster.
And we see that he's transformed himself into his true form of the evil Loki. Next issue, believe it or not, things get worse. Dare we say, the Juggernaut? And that is Thor, Volume 2, Number 16, also known as Thor Number 518. And we'll have a few words to say about that right after this.
You like cheap comic books, right? Well, I'm Professor Allen, and I talk about cheap comic books on the Quarterbin Podcast. In every episode, I'll dissect a single comic from my collection, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for the issue. Forget about $4 new comics that you can read in 4 minutes, or crossover events that can cost $100 to collect. Join me in the Quarter Bin, where even bad comics are a bargain, and good ones are a steal. The Quarter Bin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky Podcast Network. Visit us at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, or search Relatively Geeky or Quarterbin Podcast on iTunes. I guarantee it'll be worth every penny.
And we are back. So, yeah, of course I have a few things to say about this issue, though I'll be honest, I don't have that much to say about it, because there's not that much to say. It's another pretty solid issue here from Jurgens and company. We have the return of J.R. Jr. on the art, which makes it odd that having had a couple of months off from the Art Chores. We still have some really wonky stuff going on here with the art. This weird couple of pages here where Thor's shoulder is about twice the size of his head. It's just kind of odd. Though I have to say, yeah, I really like the dynamism of J.R. Jr.'s artwork. I think he draws a really exciting comic book page. And again, I think he draws Kirby Crackle perhaps even better than Kirby himself. You know, the lot of the energy effects and so forth look really, really cool on this. And it's aided, of course, by some pretty good coloring. We have some pretty good coloring going on. And anytime you're dealing with like this weird sorcerical sort of world, you know, of energy blasts and Kirby Crackle and that kind of thing, I think the coloring can make a big difference on that. And I think that this is a really good looking issue, some of the wonky anatomy and stuff notwithstanding. Again, it's this kind of a, as they would say on Hey Kids Comics, Fighty McFightenstein issue. There's really not that much story here. We have, you know, snippets of the subplot dealing with Jake Olsen and Jane Foster, and the rest of it is just sort of this extended fight scene. So there's really not a whole lot to say other than that. Again, I like Dan Jurgen's storytelling sense. I like where he's going with it. I like, you know, a lot of things about this issue. It's really cool that they brought back the Enchanters. And that's something I talked about in prior shows, so I'm not going to belabor it here. But so far, so good. And we'll see where this story goes. All right. And with that, it is time to wrap up the show. Wow, it went quick this week. Thanks again, folks, very much for listening. I really do appreciate it. Now, if you want to contact the show, you can do so. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And you can also join us on Facebook. Just look for Radio Free Asgard on the Facebook group, and you will find us. And with that, I am back over the Rainbow Bridge, back to Midgard. And we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. You have been listening to Radio Free Asgard, a production of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all associated characters are mostly copyright Marvel Comics. The stories presented are done so for educational, review, and entertainment purposes only. No ownership is implied. The silly voices, however, well, they're all me. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, are copyright Mots Vent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, or even join our Facebook group. We really love hearing from our listeners, and we appreciate all of your support. Thanks once again very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.